Welcome to Gaga Noon Nidida, Let's Talk to Each Other, a program of Ojibwe stories and culture. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. I'm from the Lacouture Ojibwe Reservation in northwest Wisconsin, and I'm currently an assistant professor of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Our guest today is Gordon Jourdain, who grew up in the Ojibwe community of Lac La Croix in Ontario. He currently serves as the lead teacher at NYYoung, the Ojibwe Language Immersion Nest, on the campus of the University of Minnesota Duluth.
Wabuzuk, Mevija, Kebinojiri, Angintawi Chiokwa, Nimama, Nopiming, Guchigo, Magja, Nanan, Gudwasibi, Nashnishwasibi, Bonagisian, Kiagota, Ginita, Gudu, Nea Pigibi Bon and Nekijayang Nopiming, Eta Shogayanako, Gimisayan, Danjimikan Guchi, a Meshkig. Aya, when the Shiguiti Bashion, the Meshkigan. Etika kitchen nang jagana shiokki aya da shaya apichigi ki aya wewe ni gi chigen tu tu iban ki ma cha sha wewe ni gi chige che che go tu wewe ni gi a ki unash ki natta so ke ya pane kabe gi ji ko ngi nende men wi bang ngi ne ma cha na ko ni wis ni men gi se bogak ni men ke men ge ni be win win ani bi shogi men ke Bimmy one name in game, a skimmut, skimmutton, and all waga could the tayan. Ain't kin a gwaganan. With the shape me to the kinnegay, going in the shetagumba, baba uchi, and baba kino mog, baba kino mabma, kino abma, ischigate. Coming in tamgin tachigay, stiggy, gagutung. I would think yagutamabana, wabaganochi, agashi. Carin singing a gona asti. Pinashita singing and tachigay. Winda shwina yagata hapichi wingeze. Migo and so good to teje debinata wabuz on nagachikawe anayan at pimikawe and at mamikana. Ogike and aneja good to teo on a gwagan. As a gugak chenda nakamigizi, wewe no tishtun mit tiko tabachitun. Imaja good to teo on a gwagan eje a good tenig. Minoa e matatun and gotigma in. Eino ta ta sai ma kiskanda gog ma jage se se kanda gog ke mitiguni go ke apatut na ke wabus endes nibio go baba baba ya mini ma ing a mashki go baba inda na ki men ga begi shiki go edes se bigi we ang de gi we men ni wis ne men da da was a men gi kachi men ga be boni te ga begi shiki te ang gi kachi men me se ki tet ma ji go ne ash Okay, we're gonna give me quite again. Can I go again? Buying, Annie, see, ni mama, dinner. Oh, meet the gay ag, you get the kitten and the moen, then get the meet the gay ag, you get an end of moen, gishpin, me quenda man be at the wapus, me gish you up on the gill. No much saying it on a guagan, he gish it up as it can, mate, jassy. Me, I get it, a co, ni mama, but me, she could get. Kaisi te puette o kiavissa, kun tänä koko ei kutsuttu, on se mikko entäsi on, kun ei näkö oikein kiä kuttuu, vaan on se sanakat, siis chiketta vielä. Niin joo, Minik.
It's a story about when I was a child growing up on the reservation in northern Ontario with my mother who, well, actually my parents, they subsisted on living off the land because where we were at, it was a totally isolated place. And it, for us to eat, we had to hunt and gather and catch whatever we were eating. And my mother was the one that was serious about making sure that her children knew how to survive in the forest and how to, you know, sustain themselves with not having a store that you could go to buy things. So when I was a kid, 5, 6, 7 years old, was when I got trained to snare rabbits. And as an Ojibwe person, you have to know how to snare rabbits because that's the staple of who we are. Her preference would be like a swampy area where they have, you know, bog and cranberries and conifers there. Rabbits where we come from over there in Ontario tend to favor a place like that in the winter because it's got a lot of cover. And, and my mom was an expert at catching rabbits. It would be an all-day activity for us to do that. Like, we'd get up early in the morning and have a nice breakfast before we went. She'd, of course, drink her tea. I'd drink my water because we didn't have anything else. And then we'd take a pack with a little bit of snacks in there and a little axe and of course, our snare wire. She was really serious about how she did that. Very, very respectful of the prey that she was going to go get, and to Ojibwe people, showing respect to another biological life form that you're going to go after to sustain your physical essence and your spiritual essence, and that any kind of animal that you go pursue in the forest was willingly placed on this earth to do that for us as in honor of the one creator that placed us all here. My mother knew all that. Mm-hmm. And of course, at that age, I didn't know that then. But as I get older, reaching over half a century now, I start to think about those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I teach little kids too now, and I teach other adults. So in her view, it was a very respectful thing to do. It wasn't just like we were making fun of these little critters right. that were out there. So she would take her time and very, very purposefully, you know, in a very respectful way, she knew which trails to put her snares at. She would get a stick and put it there, or there would already be a stick there. Then she'd go and hang up her snare and very carefully make sure that it was secure so that the rabbit wouldn't suffer. And there's other things that we talked about when that happens. When your rabbit is still alive, you have to do certain things to make sure you do that in a respectful way. So I learned those things. And at the end of the day, because this was a purposeful life lesson for me and also for us to put food on our table, we'd go home before the sun goes down and have dinner. She'd cook dinner. Sometimes we'd bring a rabbit from previous night or a couple nights before, and she'd take care of that right away. And she would do a lot of things with the rabbit hide. Another thing that I said in my the Ojibwe portion of this is, as a young child, my mother would say, "Majigunayash, make sure when you're falling asleep, don't think about your snare." And I wondered, why does she say that? So I asked her that one time, and she said, "Because your thoughts are going to be at your snare, and your snare will move around. And if it moves around, the rabbit will see it flickering in the moonlight or something, and it won't go there, and probably won't go there until you stop thinking about your snare." Yeah, that's the essence of that Ojibwe story there. We had a huge family. My parents had 13 children. They had 8 boys and 5 girls. And of course, we didn't all grow up at the same time because the range of our ages is probably maybe 20 years. So when I was a kid, some of my older siblings were already living on their own and having children of their own as well. So there was 4 boys at home when I was a kid. And sometimes she would catch just one rabbit. And we lived with my grandmother. Actually, there was 5 boys at home. One of my oldest brothers still lived there. So she would make sure that everybody had their pieces. We would all get the same piece all the time. When I was a kid, I always had that piece. And I still love that piece. I absolutely love that. Of course, there's not that many parts on a rabbit. When you take off the hide, it's pretty small.
Yeah.
You use the hind legs and the mid portion of it where she would take out all the intestines, of course, and use whatever she did, the heart and the liver, and including the head. That was my grandmother's favorite part. She would just salivate to have, to waiting for that too. For her, that was a delicacy. Sometimes she would share those rabbit eyes. They're good when you eat those. Those are very good. But with rabbit fur, my mother would use the entire fur of the rabbit to line our moccasins that she would make for us to go play outside in the bitter, bitter cold up in northern Ontario. It's extremely cold up there.
you can only wear those kinds of shoes that are lined with rabbit skin when it's extremely cold. Mm. Otherwise, you're sweating and they would freeze and you would have really frostbite or something on your feet. Before we were born, my grandmother would talk about how they used the rabbit fur to make winter blankets. I never had the opportunity to see one of those, though. But apparently it takes a lot of rabbits to make a winter blanket, so... And I don't catch too many.
You know, I was wondering, too, like a day like today, for example, because we've been talking about this, going out and setting snares, and you mentioned the trail. I think you mentioned this in the Ojibwe portion, too, that you go to a spot where the trail is worn down. But how does that work then when today we've had like an inch of snow, things kind of change? You just have to kind of know like where they've been and kind of keep an eye on these same spots, or?
Well, it comes with recognizing how well-worn the rabbit trails would be.
Mm-hmm.
They would be like packed right down when a rabbit thinks that it's the safest place to go on this trail. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll see a rabbit go off with just one trail going there. You wouldn't want to be thinking you'd put your snare there because maybe that was just a means of escaping some kind of predator.
Yep.
Just to get away from the main trail. You have an advantage when there's fresh snow. My brothers are really good hunters. They would use like ushkinam.
Mm-hmm.
Ushkinam means it. To me, when I was young, it meant the animal was coming, all of a sudden it turned that way.
Hmm.
Ushkinam, like ushka adu, it turns, but I didn't know until I started hunting myself that it means a fresh track.
Hmm.
Urshki is something that's new.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's fresh fallen snow, you'd know right away this is one of their favorite trails.
Hmm.
Now you're taking all my secrets. You're going to have to give me more sema for those.
You know, we kind of talked before about how we think about things in the traditional way, that we're doing things respectfully so it's not inhumane or anything like that.
There's a very beautiful oral tradition that I heard from one of our most respected elders up in Ontario. Her name is Ogimai Gonaibik, and I do a lot of Ojibwe language immersion sessions with her, with younger people and adults as well. And I heard her tell one of the most beautiful stories about why we do that and why a rabbit would be willing to allow itself to be cut. It's a reciprocal relationship of respect between us as a human culture and animal, the rabbit mainly.
Mm-hmm.
In an Anishinaabe worldview, we are related as biological organisms. We're not any different. Just because they're a different life form doesn't mean that we're higher or lower than any other life form on this earth. And as a person who grew up traditionally that way, I feel I don't have any disrespect for respectfully putting out my sema to go and do these things, and having had the blessing of the teachings of my mother and my grandmother and elders like Ogimai Gonaibik, who will always know what I'm doing, because that's the way Ojibwe life is. It's a social network, and you're responsible to all of those different levels of that social network. So you have to behave with how you do those things. You know, there's etiquette in how to clean the rabbit as well. Each of those animals have a special gift for us as human beings, and we need to respect them in a way and take care of that part that they cherish the most.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to go and recklessly do that without consideration of those is a slap in the face to all biological life forms that we value as Anishinaabe people.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard from different elders that if we don't respect the animals that way, they'll go away. They just won't come back.
This is Gaga Nunidida. Let's Talk to Each Other, a program of Ojibwe stories and culture. Our guest today is Gordon Jourdain, who grew up in the Ojibwe community of Lac La Croix in Ontario. He currently serves as the lead teacher at NYYoung, the Ojibwe language immersion nest on the campus of the University of Minnesota Duluth.
Ojibwe language, let's talk about that. That's something that's very dear to my heart. I'm a first language Ojibwe speaker, and just like anything, it's a progressive acquisition of the language.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, most of the things that I share with you, I heard them from one of the most prominent elders in my life, was my grandmother.
Her name is Bipkluitamok. She also has two other names that I carry for when I think about her. And her clan was Moose Clan.
Hmm.
I often teased her about that. She was, of course, 110. She was really frail, but she had all her mental capacities in place. She still had black hair and all her teeth when she was 100 years old because she used really, really authentic, natural things to take care of her teeth and her and her hair. She was a member of what they call the Long Life Society, Goyakubi Madziwin, Kagigebi Madziwin. From the morning she woke up, she was singing Ojibwe songs. She would be combing her long hair, and then she'd get me to get up, and I'd braid her hair for her. Every morning I braided her hair. She had beautiful long hair, and she'd take care of herself that way, respectfully. Things that I understand now that I'm over 50 years old, I didn't understand when I was a kid, but it comes from the same story, right? As I get knowledgeable about life and I start to have these questions, almost like a default, I go back to what my grandmother told me when I was 5 years old. And I have an epiphany. I go, aha, that's what she was talking about. But I didn't understand it then. So that's like acquisition of languages. I think anyway, that's how the language, you acquire that as well. So anybody that's listening out there that's having a hard time trying to pass Ojibwe 101 or something, don't feel so bad. My grandmother, as old as she was, she would always be very, very joyful and really, really happy to see the first fall of snow. And her expression always was, "Mana majigo neas gushkuzin daga dagushin go komisinan." That means, "Majigo neas, wake up, please. Our grandmother has arrived." So for my grandmother, there were grandmothers for her as well. And she was always happy to see the snow falling. Of course, at the time, I didn't know again what that meant. But now I think I do. It's a very harsh time when the snow starts to fall. And preparing for the winter was an activity that revolved around the life of everybody, I suppose, preparing to make sure you had enough food, make sure you had enough wood. And it just brings me to how the Gikinonoen is a year, how that's divided up into different moons. Each of those moons would be named after the activity that would take place to prepare for the winter. Snow, it's actually a very beautiful thing to have because it just calms down the earth. It's like a blanket that just covers it up and calms it down. Along with that, it's the harshness of winter. But in harshness as well, there's love in there. There has to be a balance in those two things. An example is the rivers. If the rivers didn't freeze over and the lakes didn't freeze over, everything in it would perish. Nothing would be alive. So in that essence, when the beautiful snow falls, our grandmother falls, it just keeps it a certain temperature so that everything that lives in there can survive. So there's something beautiful about the harshness of cold. When you think about it that way, it's just a different way of looking at what everybody else is looking at. Winter is a beautiful time. I always looked forward to the winter solstice. My grandmother would always sit by this window, this magical window at the house, and look at the sun as it was going down in the horizon. On that day at the winter solstice, she would say, "Come and look at this. Come and look where that sun is going to rest for a little while." The sun goes down across the horizon like this and stops and almost goes back into the same spot again on that day and then starts to go back across the horizon until it stops in June at the summer solstice. As another way of measuring the cycles of the year, Ojibwe people use the sun and the moon as well to keep the rhythm of their relationship to the natural world, the rice and the fish and the different times of activities that took place. That was the measure of when exactly it was the perfect time to go get something. Everything on the earth is cyclical that way. And to survive without having the modern amenities like stores and gasoline and vehicles,
there was probably not a way that you could survive if you weren't cognizant of the environmental changes and cycles of the passage of time. And I teach this to the children that I teach because I want to be able to have them understand the natural world that they're looking at at night, you know. Why does the moon look like that? Well, the moon is dark. It's going to be dark on February 10th because it's the new moon, and that's the beginning of Namibe Negesis. Sometimes the moons are named after what activity has to be done, what the animals are doing, what the fish are doing, or what the birds are doing. Because that would be a time that lets you know, hey, it's time to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
This time of the year, the eagles, of course, they leave because it's just so cold up there.
Right.
So this time of the year, the moon that's going to come up would be Megizi Vigizis.
Okay.
It's like the moon when the eagles return.
This time of year, what kind of food were you guys eating? Was it kind of dependent on the season then, or was it...
The community where I grew up, of course, it's totally a lot different than it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody there spoke Ojibwe. Everybody, including our animals and pets.
Hmm.
You know, I always tell this story that even our dogs understood Ojibwe. If you said, get out of here to my dog, he would wag his tail and look at you. But if you said, Mahjong, put his tail between his legs and go.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was. Everybody spoke Ojibwe. Except for our teachers who came from downtown Toronto, who spoke English. And my mother was Wasisi clan, the fish clan. She was really, really serious about how her children took care of the fish that we went after. We were taught not to be greedy and take more than what we needed. We were taught never to hunt or pursue deer or fish when the fish were spawning.
Mm-hmm.
And when the deers, for example, were carrying little babies, there's something you would never do. Of course, I'm not a hunter right now, and I love to fish, although I don't get out as much. That's the only times I would not do that.
Right.
And if we did get something, it would have to be a male buck.
Mm-hmm.
My brothers would get those. Of course, I was younger, and they were hunters and fisher people. My mother would respectfully take care of the animal right away as soon as my brothers brought it in and take care of it and cut it up and divide it into portions. And then she would go out and summon her sisters and they would all come and take the meat or the fish that we cut. And sometimes we'd end up with nothing. But it's just the way that the society where I grew up in was like.
Hmm.
Because we had to take care of each other. We were out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's going to take care of us.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Where I grew up, they didn't have anything like what they have now, like welfare society.
Right.
They didn't have that. If there was a family that was having a hard time, my uncle, his name is Mijaki Webines, he would just come in to our house and say, this family is having a hard time, would you like to donate something? Mm. And my mother and my grandmother would be digging around, finding stuff, and they'd put it in the bag, and he'd leave. They wouldn't ask who. They had no reason to know who it was.
Mm.
But they would take care of that family, enough food to sustain them for at least a month without any social assistance and leading a healthy life, living off the land and not eating anything that's processed.
Yeah. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how comfortable you felt talking about stories. We talk about, you know, when we tell traditional stories and when it's appropriate to do that. And sometimes I think it's hard for non-natives and you know, sometimes Ojibwe people too to kind of understand why we don't do that. And I have a certain way I explain it, but I was just interested in hearing your take on that. And maybe this isn't the proper forum to do that.
We live in a modern culture now. And for us to be as strong as we used to be, we have to participate in mainstream society as well now.
Mm-hmm.
If we have to hide who we are, then we're not really that strong as we used to be. My grandmother, I always refer back to her, didn't speak one word of English, yet we made it everywhere. We made it all over America and Canada. And it didn't affect me at all that she didn't speak English because I spoke English for her. Mm-hmm. And I would translate from a very young age with my very limited English back then.
Mm-hmm.
I started school late at 7 years old.
I didn't know any English before that. And I would translate for her. And of course, because I respect her very much, I have to be very, very accurate on how I translate English to Ojibwe and Ojibwe to English, because I have to have 100% accuracy. Otherwise, I'd be not telling her the truth.
Right.
And I wouldn't want to do that to my grandmother, and let alone an elder. From a traditional worldview, we are very respectful and polite people.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we're a war society as well.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother was, her grandfather was a war chief. He was a Mi'te war chief. And my grandmother did everything out of love for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have a healthy balance of those things. But yet, as a traditional Ojibwe person, we still have to be out in society. And mm-hmm. So I don't have any problem talking about any of these things in any forum. Of course, I have a gate on what I allow myself to share. There are ceremonies and traditional stories that I wouldn't dare talk about in any public place. There are places for those in different Ojibwe lodges and ceremonies that happen. But as a teacher of young children, our demographic is not dominantly Ojibwe students. Mm-hmm. We're probably 60% Native American or descendants of Native Americans. Our primary focus is on revitalizing the language. In that same way, I still share a lot of the traditional and extremely sacred teachings of the Ojibwe, my Ojibwe grandmother,
mm-hmm.
indirectly in how I talk to the children, how I listen to them, how I react to them, the space that they're in. It's always perfectly clean there because I respect these little life forms that I was given responsibility to take care of. I'm lucky to be able to be raised in the old traditional Ojibwe way, and I'm also lucky to understand and be taught in an academic setting. And that's what I'm talking about. We have to mm-hmm. be both.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to revert back to what I know the best, and that is the teachings of my grandmother. I do that because who you are listening to here right now is my grandmother. I'm speaking for her. Even though I know and my family knows and everybody that knew her, she left this world physically. The way that she raised me, her voice and her worldview and her beautiful way of looking at humanity is still here.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hearing it. You're hearing it in English now,
mm-hmm.
rather than the traditional way that I heard it. And I am thinking in Ojibwe when I'm speaking to you. I'm trying to make it as authentic in English as I can. There's nothing artificial about what I'm saying to you. It's directly from my grandmother. And that's how I teach the kids. I don't want to leave anything out, the essence of why I am teaching them in that language. I really feel strongly about acquiring language. I think there has to be that essence of lessons and teachings that come with the language when you're thinking you are teaching mm-hmm. somebody how to speak Ojibwe. You have to be knowledgeable about traditions and grandmothers.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not, luckily we still have a lot of them here with us to go to.
Mm-hmm. That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank our guest, Gordon Jourdain, for sharing his stories with us. This is Gaga Noon Nidada. Let's Talk to Each Other, a program of Ojibwe Stories and Culture. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. Gaga Noon Nidada is produced in cooperation with KUMD and the Department of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota Duluth, with funding provided in part by a UMD Strategic Initiative Grant from the Chancellor's Office of the University of Minnesota Duluth, and by N.A. Gikane Da Soyoung, the Center for Indigenous Knowledge and Language Revitalization at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Please join us for our next program, Monday, March 18th at 6 p.m., right here on 103.3 KUMD, your community connection.